Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Celebrity Show. You can check me out on Twitter at Total Tutor, and I think we do have our guest on the line. Haley, are you on the line?
Yeah, how are you?
I'm really excited to welcome the program. Haley Arantia, a star of the Goldbergs on ABC, 8 p.m. Eastern, Wednesday night. Haley, it's our favorite show, my wife and I. We watch it every week. We can't wait to the DVR to check it out because it's just so great because we grew up in the 80s and we kind of, you know, reminisce about these times and laugh about them. And I think it's just such a great show. You do such a great job. It's something when you think about it, Haley, it's like every week people reminisce. And I'm sure on Twitter, you're always seeing that of people saying, I remember that time when this happened in history and what happened in the 1980s. It's just something that just is so special.
Yeah, no, all the time people tell me that, you know, hey, I grew up in the 80s and what you wore is exactly what I wore. Or, you know, I remember such and such event. And really cool to kind of see how much they resonate with not only the show, but just a show about the 80s. You know, anything that's nostalgic really hits home with people.
It definitely hits home for me, for sure. And I think Haley, it's so funny. It's so hilarious. And I'm sure when you first got the idea, you never thought how it would take off, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, we did a pilot, and as much as I personally thought the writing was hilarious, you know, you never know what the network's going to say, and thankfully they picked it up, and it's been doing really, really well, and we're in our fourth season now, so I never imagined it going this far just because it's such a surreal concept that you would be working on a show for this many years, but we got really lucky, and the show is just, I love it. It's hilarious. So.
And I'm sure you want to come back and play. And you guys just seem like such a family. What happens, Haley? You know?
Yeah. I mean, we are, like, on and off set. We're just so close. And, I mean, I work with two of, like, the funniest people in improv, like Wendy McLennan Covey and Jeff Harlan. Like, working with them every day is such a trip because you never know what's going to come out of their mouth. And it makes the day so exciting. But, yeah, I'm very grateful that we all get along as much as we do.
What should we expect for the next season? This season coming up?
Well, this season, there's a lot of drama happening. Beverly Goldberg becomes a substitute teacher at the school. And that in and of itself has just created a lot of insane storylines for the writers. And then for my character specifically, she's spending this season trying to accept that the guy that she has been coming to realization that she has a crush on, which is Jeff, is now with Evie. And so she's trying to, it's a whole drama of a love triangle, I guess.
The challenges that happen, right? And always there'll be something with Adam as well that's going to happen, right? That I expect for sure.
Always. Adam joins high school this season. And I mean, there's a lot of new things going on in Goldberg House.
Well, you have a lot of cool things coming up, especially let's talk about your singing. I didn't know all about it, and we're going to play the CD after the interview, so for the syndication, but I wanted to find out a little bit about your new song being released.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I just released a song on Friday called Strong, Sweet, and Southern, and it's a country pop kind of bluesy song, upbeat, and I wrote it with Mark Bright and Kevin Kadish in Nashville, Tennessee. And it's just a fun song about, you know, girls telling guys, like, hey, step it up and be a gentleman because chivalry is not dead. So it's been a fun thing to put out and see how people resonate with it, and it's been great.
And were you a singer before you started acting? What was first? What came first?
Music was first. I've been singing my whole life, and then acting kind of came about when I turned 18. I got the Goldberg.
Wow. And from there, it's amazing what's been happening for sure. And we can check that out on iTunes, right? Correct? Your latest song, correct?
Yeah, you can buy it on iTunes or Google Play, and you can stream it on Spotify and Amazon Music. Or not Amazon, I'm sorry, Apple Music.
Now, so I have about 55,000 questions I could ask about the Goldbergs, but your character, what do you see her as she continues to grow up through this process in the 4 years? I mean, it's just, it's funny how she is a leader in so many ways in the family based on specific things, but where do you see it going?
Yeah, Erica has always been kind of the straight man, the level-headed one of the whole family, and keeps everybody on track. But I think Erica's really grown over the last 4 years. You know, when she started high school, her goal was to just be super popular and have everybody like her and, you know, whatever comes with that. But now she's kind of gotten more into music and, you know, doing different charity work and extracurricular activities and more involved than what I think she assumed she was going to be in her first year. So now being the senior, she's kind of wanting to take this year off and really relax, but it's not going to happen with Beverly Goldberg in the school.
And you have to laugh every time on set with her. She's so funny, I tell you.
She's incredible. Yeah, I mean, she's the funniest human being. I mean, the stuff she comes up with is incredible, and it's been a blast working with her.
And have any of the outfits you're wearing, Haley, on set, you think is going to come back in style at times? It's kind of funny when you look at things in the 80s and how it comes back.
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of the clothes that I wear on the show, they buy from, like, Forever 21 and American Apparel. So it's stuff that's, like, out right now for sale. I mean, I'll be out at a mall with my friends and I'll go, wait a minute, I've worn those shorts before. And it's really weird, but the 80s are kind of back.
And I think that what makes the show so great is, again, how the real Adam Goldberg's involved in this, meaning that he really puts his spin on things of the storylines and how he filmed everything when he was a kid. I can't believe that. Not many people did that. That's just amazing to go back and see how his family was.
Yeah, he has hundreds of thousands of hours of home video, and he uses a bit of it at the end of every episode, which I think is genius because it's such a unique take on scripted television. I mean, it's about a real family, and it's incredible the storylines he comes up with that are based on these situations on home video.
I say to myself, I'm not even videoing enough for my kids. I have 5 kids of my own, Haley, and I'm like, holy cow. At that time, I don't know how many people were filming all that stuff. It's just hilarious to watch and see and how he tells the story and how everything that happens with Adam and the storyline's a lot of fun. So, and Adam, I'm sure, is going to have a relationship as well. Give us a clue. Is there going to be a new love in his life, or we have to wait and see?
I think we're going to have to wait and see. He's starting his new year, and, you know, his old girlfriend went off and moved away, sadly, and so he is starting this high school completely fresh, and, you know, I don't know. Maybe the writers will find him a cute little freshman girlfriend, but at this point, I guess we'll have to wait and see.
You have to wait and see, Haley, and you have to let us know for sure. So, again, we can purchase your song on iTunes. We can download that now, but where's the best place we can follow you and find out information on you, Haley?
You can follow me on all social media. So Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook are all the same. It's just my name, Haley Orantia.
All right. And now everyone can tune in right now and listen to Strong, Sweet, and Southern with Haley. Take care, Haley. And thanks again for calling. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care. I'll see you later. Bye-bye. All right, remember, ABC's The Goldbergs will be 8 p.m. Eastern this Wednesday. And now tune in to Haley's song.
Working for it. Hi, Anton. All right, stand by. All right, I'm really excited to welcome the program Anton Starkman of Warner Brothers Storks. Anton, thanks for calling, and I know you're getting enthused because it's coming very close to its release nationwide in theaters, right?
Yeah, super excited.
I'm sure you're super excited, and tell me a little bit. I want to get into what your experience with American Horror Story before we go right into Storks, but what awesome opportunities you've had in the last year, haven't you?
Yeah, it's crazy. I'm like, it's crazy to look back and like see how privileged it is. All this experiences.
Exactly. So tell me a little bit of how this whole American Horror Story thing happened, and to be able to work with such talented people in that first, and then look at Storks now. So wow.
Yeah, the people are not only amazingly talented, but they're down to earth and insanely nice. The experiences were, I don't know even how to describe it, but it was just a learning experience because, like, American Horror Story itself is just a machine. Like, it all works together. Like, you can see the gears turning everywhere. And it's just a privilege and an honor to be, like, part of that machine, like, part of the process.
Yeah, definitely, Anton. It's a privilege to be part of that whole situation. And what was your character in American Horror Story?
My character, his name was Max Ellison, and in the beginning of the season, my character has not had his measles injection yet. He gets a case of the measles, and he becomes very ill. And Alex, she comes in and gives me some of her blood in the show, and she turns me into a vampire. And then I go back to school and turn all my class into vampires, and we pretty much destroy the school.
Oh my! So you're really tearing things up, aren't you, Anton?
Yeah, definitely. Me and my crew.
Your crew. So are your classmates in school nervous about you coming in there after having this experience to school?
Oh, definitely. All the ones that could watch it and were not scared by it, we're all definitely worried that let's just say they all put me in the back.
All right. So then that experience and then Storks, and I know how it works. You get the part, you can't say anything. So once you audition, got the part, Storks, you pretty much couldn't mention filming or anything for a while, right? You pretty much had to stay hush-hush, right?
Yeah. It was definitely hush-hush. It was hard to stay so quiet about things that I just wanted to burst out. Like, I just wanted to tell everyone about it, but I couldn't. But it was super fun. Like, I mean, the process of an animated film, especially Storks, is awing. Because, like, it's not only, like, you just show up, say the lines. No, you're really, like, part of, like, the creative team when you're part of there. There's, like, so many jokes. They all laugh at their own jokes. They're pretty much, like, grown children.
Exactly. And so when you do read your lines, were you in with somebody else doing the lines as well when they were recording you?
There's me and, like, the creative team. And there was... They brought the parents in of the scratch vocals, but not Ty Burrell and Jennifer Aniston.
Okay.
So I haven't met.
You've not met them. Okay.
Yeah. No.
When is the premiere? Are you going to get to meet them at the premiere, Anton?
I definitely hope so. The premiere is on the 17th. So I'm anticipating that.
All right. That's great news. So, and then saying, okay, they're the ones that played. So it's interesting. You worked with Jennifer Aniston in a way and Lady Gaga. That you wouldn't have thought that if I was talking to you a couple of years ago, you'd say you would have those experiences, right?
Yeah. It was the people that I did meet. It's crazy. Like I wanted to take me and one of the cast members, like one of the children, we wanted to take a picture with Kathy Bates and Dennis O'Hare, and the other girl that I was working with, she forgot her phone. So she said, Dennis O'Hare was just like, oh, it's totally fine. I'll just take it with mine and send it to your dad. And then,
you always,
what? That happened?
Yeah. Anton, you always you can't miss those opportunities, right? I'm sure you'll have your phone out the whole time at the red carpet, right? Saying, oh my gosh,
for
so
sure.
Real.
Taking pictures with everyone and everywhere.
So you can build those likes, right? The Instagram, the Twitter, all the different things, getting used to the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting. I was talking, Anton, to one of the hosts from E! News, and she says they're doing the whole thing
mm-hmm.
Facebook Live. It's amazing what these events, how they're developing from the Emmys to red carpet events. They're just such big things, and they're allowing the fans to be part of it. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, pretty much all social media is getting even more Instagram stories. There's just all these things that are having like the viewers and the fans be more like involved.
All right, so let's get to your character, Nate Gardner, and tell us a little about that character. I've heard about storks in specific ways. I talked to Pigeon Toady, and I forget the actor's name, and I'm sorry about that. It'll come to me in a second. Jason. Yeah. So tell me a little bit about your character.
Okay. My character, Nate, he's just a regular boy, and all he wants is just – because his parents work, they're realtors, so they work 24/7 every day. And all Nate wants is just someone to play with. So when he finds this letter from How to Order a Baby, he jumps on that train to order up his brother as soon as possible so he has someone to play with, because that's all he's been dreaming of. Oh, sorry,
Continue. No, continue. Sure. I heard you stop for a second. Continue.
It was just that, like, the movie it's full of, like, heart, and it's breathtaking. Like, my mom has cried multiple times just from one line.
Yeah, and what's, I think, so cool is because of the whole storks genre, how... When I grew up, they talked about storks delivering babies, and to be put this as a storyline out there, Anton, and then have it where the storks were no longer delivering babies, and the whole storyline is they're finally going to deliver a baby. What a great story!
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's so hard to describe. I just mean it's full of heart. It's kid friendly. It's like pretty much for all ages. Like all ages will love it.
Yeah, I absolutely believe it. I'm taking my whole family to see Storks, especially when I've interviewed two of the actors. So I find that really cool. And again, it's nationwide September 23rd. Anton, best place we can find information on you and stuff. Where can we find info on you and stuff? Where can we go?
Well, I'm on all social media: Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, all of that. And I'm on IMDb, all of that, all my info's there.
And it's Anton Starkman on Twitter, @ Anton Starkman, is that correct?
Yeah, that's it. No spaces.
Fantastic. Well, good luck enjoy the premiere next week, and thanks for taking the time to come on the show, and good luck in all your ventures, man.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Take care. See you, Anton. Take care. Bye-bye. That was the Total Celebrity Show. Take care, everyone. See you later. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Total Celebrity Show. You can check me out on Twitter at Total Tutor, and I think we do have our guest on the line. Do we have Governor Jesse Ventura on the line? Jesse, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. Hi, Neil.
Hi, I'm so excited to welcome the program, New York Times bestselling author, Jesse Ventura. And Jesse, I'm telling you, this book, I am going to have an interesting conversation with you because I'm sold on some of this, but not some others not. Again, Jesse Ventura's Marijuana Manifesto. He's written, and Jesse, you pretty much want marijuana to be legalized everywhere, right? Does it sound like that to me?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me explain. If it wasn't for marijuana right now, my quality of life would be gone. It was gone completely. Someone very close to me developed an epileptic seizure disorder and was having horrible seizures up to 3 to 4 times a week.
Wow.
This person was put on 4 different pharmaceutical medicines. None of them worked. All had horrible side effects. The person went to Colorado, got medical marijuana, and has been seizure-free now for over 2.5 years and is taking no pharmaceuticals whatsoever. And marijuana was the savior to this person's health. Read Steve Cuppy's intro. He had non-operable adrenal cancer and was given a 5-year death sentence 35 years ago. He's still alive today, and it's attributed completely to marijuana.
So do you think that we should legalize medical marijuana? I mean, it should be medical marijuana?
We should legalize all marijuana.
All marijuana.
There's no difference. The whole plant is – let me give it to you this way, okay? George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and Ben Franklin would all be raided by the DEA today. They would be arrested, and they'd be doing 10 to 12 years in federal prison as drug dealers today. Marijuana was the economic backbone of this country for the first 160 years. The British, during the colony days, actually ordered the colonists to grow it because they didn't have enough room over in Britain to grow it. You could actually barter trade it in lieu of money. So what went wrong? Our country was phenomenal growing back then, was achieving economic success. And then along came the 1930s with William Randolph Hearst, who wanted to corner the market on paper. By the way, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and Betsy Ross's flag are all made out of marijuana.
That
it was the dominant force of America 100 back then? It was.
And I think it's interesting you say is...
I rest your case.
Now, what about, let's talk about, but once it's legalized, kids can't have it. You think it should be at 21, right? Or 18 to you? Or
whatever, choose the age. It should be treated identically the same as we treat tobacco and the same as we treat alcohol. I've made a famous quote. I said, marijuana is to rock and roll what beer is to baseball. Imagine if they took away beer at the ball game and wouldn't let anybody have it.
They go crazy. People would go crazy, wouldn't they?
Oh, they absolutely. Well, look at it this way. We have this thing in America where we fear certain drugs. Imagine tomorrow if you could make coffee disappear and no one could get their caffeine addiction in the morning.
If I couldn't have my coffee, Jesse, I'd be dead. I don't know what I'd do.
There you go. Well, you laugh over it, but it's marijuana's no more. Caffeine's as dangerous as marijuana.
Right.
Nobody has ever died from a marijuana overdose.
Right.
You can go on a drinking binge and die that night. Cigarettes, when used properly, the end result is death.
So the concern I have, and this is another point I'll make, is it used as a gateway drug? Certain people are saying that if kids are starting this at 15, 14.
People don't know what they're talking about because when they say gateway drug, look at your own personal experience. The first drug all kids try is tobacco, yet they don't count that as a drug, do they?
No.
The second thing kids try is alcohol. So, and here's what's in your face on a gateway drug. in the states that have legalized marijuana, the use of heroin has gone down. The exact opposite of what they've told us. It will work against post-traumatic stress. It's helped soldiers.
Wow.
It'll work the head injuries in the NFL, the head traumas.
Yes.
Marijuana will help that also. All known by the Cannabis University over in Israel. They've studied it. There are no more studies that need to be done.
And so that's interesting. So you're saying that we aren't studying the alcohol use, and we're not studying the smoking tobacco, and kids are starting at 13 and drinking, and then they start marijuana, and they say, oh, it's marijuana that caused them to go on heroin. That's not the case. It's just an addiction that they...
And that's proven false now. In the states that have legalized marijuana, heroin usage has gone down, not up, down. You know, many people would give. I mean, look at all the soldiers we're sending to these immoral wars over in the Middle East now. They're all coming home, and they have post-traumatic stress from combat. And marijuana's been proved to help them, but yet the government won't let them have it because the this is a bigger issue than that. This is an issue that could stand up of us telling our government we're the boss. Because over 50% of Americans want it fully legalized now, and the only thing standing in the way is the lobbyists from pharma and alcohol and the government. The government's telling us they're being our parent here.
Right.
And it's time for us to step forward and say, no. We're the boss. You work for us. We want marijuana legalized. It will help the economy. It'll create jobs, clothing, biodiesel fuel. Do I need to go on?
And then a big thing, Jesse's California, right? That's coming up for a vote for legalization throughout California, right?
I don't know. I guess it is. They tell me it is.
But we have to wait and see, right? If it's going to happen or not.
No. But the point is that all the states are going to do it when they see the economic boom.
Right.
Colorado already has, I think, $300 million extra tax dollars to spend this year on schools. Washington has seen their judicial budget statewide drop a mammoth 15%.
Wow.
Because, that's huge. Yeah. I can tell you that as a governor. That's huge. And all the jobs it would create, it would help the economy. And poor people, here's the other reason they don't want it legalized. You can grow it. So therefore, the government, if you grow it in your backyard, the government doesn't get a cut, do they? You can get it free. Remember this, our government does not want you getting anything free.
No.
They would charge you for the air you breathe if they could do it.
And they're trying to do that.
They would. If they can do it, they will. And that's the big rub on marijuana. And plus, the government's making money off it. Take a look at the DEA. We give you multiple examples during this supposed war on drugs where they break into homes, shoot and kill people, and then find out that they had the wrong house and nobody stands trial for it.
They're let off
the hook. It's called collateral damage in a war, I guess, where people need to wake up and understand in all wars, including the war on drugs, the Middle East wars, the biggest people that get killed are the civilians. That's what happens in all wars. That's why it's time to end them all.
Well, and again, that's the big thing you're seeing in this election is it's becoming even more of a craziness as well, as we talked about last time on the show, and who knows where it's going next for sure. And best place we can purchase your book is in all finer bookstores, right, Jesse? Jesse Ventura's Marijuana Manifesto. Any other place we can connect with you on social media? I know that you say you have a team that takes care of all that, but people can connect with you and all those different things and purchase the book, correct?
Yep, I think so. Anyway, my job's to write the book and promote it. Everybody else does the other stuff.
Well, I hear you. It was good talking to you, and you sold me on this whole gateway drug.
Okay,
so I'll have to.
You take care.
Like I said. Yeah.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Take care. All right, you're listening to the Total Celebrities Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Larry, are you there?
Neil, how are you?
Fantastic. So I'm excited to welcome the program. Larry Kane, and he's talking about the movie The Beatles, 8 Days a Week, the documentary. Larry, thanks for calling, and I appreciate you taking the time today to be on the show.
Great to talk to the other side of the state. I'm in Philadelphia.
All right. So, Larry, tell me specifically enough when you toured with the Beatles, how that was. How amazing
it was. It was pretty incredible. I didn't want to go because I thought it was beneath the dignity of a newsman to travel with the band. And I told my bosses, why would I want to travel with a band that's going to be here in September and gone in December? And that, Neil, just shows you how brilliant I really was. I eventually, when traveling with them, had some extremely emotional moments. And when I saw the film for the first time, The Rough Cut in April, I got chills because I felt that Ron Howard was taking me back to my travels. And I can imagine with the chills that people will get who are 10, 20, 30, 40, who never saw what really happened and the pathos. And we were in the Pittsburgh Civic Center, which I believe later was called the Igloo, years later. And it was just remarkable. The crowds in Pittsburgh were like the crowds everywhere, where the girls thought that the people were looking at the Beatles, were singing directly to them. I would get letters later from them asking me, Mr. Kane, thanks for the reporting. Can you tell George that I will meet him in Chicago at the Sears Tower at 12 midnight on a certain date, and we can begin our destiny together? It was just this amazing outpouring of emotion and you didn't expect in America, even in the post John F. Kennedy death days, to feel this outpouring of physical emotion, this passion. The other thing that's amazing is that when I first saw the first cut of it, I got chills, feeling that I was back touring again with them. And I can imagine what the fans are getting who are younger, who've never seen this before. In addition, it morphs you through the entire tour's controversies and some incredible political stands that they took that changed American life.
This is part of the British invasion. This is when it really started with the Beatles, right? This is when, after the Beatles, the British invasion just went full-fledged. And certain people were for this, but ultimately, we know the controversy was that in any generation, these guys, the Beatles, were clean-cut guys, but however, were considered rebellious in certain ways from in America, right? Like, especially people.
Well, they could say my father pulled me aside and said, watch your back. These guys with the long hair are a menace to society. And the reporters in each town really made fools of themselves because they were very, very, they were ridiculing the Beatles and they're very condescending. And they would ask them questions like, what do you like in a woman? What do you like in a hemline? What do you eat for breakfast? Do you wash your hair? Do you shower today? And I basically stuck to the issues of the times, the racial divisiveness in America, the civil rights movement, the war in Vietnam, things that happened on the tour, events that occurred, music, their peers, whether they would send their own children to the concerts if they had teenagers, and they all said no. And the ways of life and the immigration controversy, the royal family, and that's why they liked me. Although John called me a round peg in a square hole and a nerd from the 1950s, but we had a wonderful relationship. And this movie, by the way, has rare unseen footage that will blow your mind because you'll be seeing the Beatles and you'll be able to hear them. And it's more than just the movies, it's the stands they took. For example, I informed them in Las Vegas that the Gator Bowl in Jacksonville was going to be segregated. And they decided as a group that they would not play there. And there were 20 days of negotiations. And on September 11, 1964, the Gator Bowl in the heart of the American South in Jacksonville was desegregated. And guess what? Ron Howard, in all his majesty of filmmaking, was able to find a woman that was there, a black woman who was there, who talked about being in a white crowd for the first time and not being nervous about conversing with white people and being part of the world. And right now she's an historian, and her stories are just amazing. Her emotional outpouring of what it did to change your life, and they changed history. They changed hair, they change culture, they change dress. Eventually, there's a poignant part of this movie where you learn why they stopped touring. And they only toured for with the Beatles with Ringo, only toured for 4 years.
Wow.
That was it. They went back in the studio and did some beautiful music, which they never performed on stage, although there's a real surprise at the end of this film that will show you just how great they were, even in a very impromptu situation.
All right, so we're again talking to Larry Kane. And Larry, when you were approached about the movie from Ron Howard, tell us that story for sure, because the documentary, because again, you were the one that was touring early with them, covering them, learning everything, the ins and outs of what this invasion was about, and the Beatles, and how amazing, like popular they were. How did this happen that you got involved in the film?
Well, I wrote a letter to the manager, Brian Epstein, and asked for one single interview in Jacksonville. And he wrote back offering us to get a seat on the plane in the limousines and the hotel rooms with them. Everything would be taken care of for the sum of $3,000 over 35 days, 25 cities. And that's when I told my bosses that I didn't want to travel with them. And they eventually talked me into it. It was a tough summer. My mother died of the impact of multiple sclerosis.
Oh, my.
And on the plane, John, who lost his mother at 18, and Paul, who lost his mother at 14, when he was 14, to cancer, actually consoled me. And that was very, very touching. And we really bonded in that way. And then they also did something else. There were wonderful groups that opened them, Jackie DeShannon, the Righteous Brothers, Clarence Frogman Henry, the Exciters. And they were big hit groups in their own way. And yet they were booed off the stage. And every night the Beatles would get on the airplane to make sure that they were okay and to talk to them and to make sure that they were whole and not upset. And I thought that was a tremendous sign of maturity. Privately, they were just as delightful as they were. I mean, years later, they had their issues. But they
wow.
were brothers, and they took care of each other.
No, the also a question, Larry, about Ron Howard. Knowing he was going to do this documentary, how did you get involved in that whole process?
Well, I got a call from the number two, Jonathan Clyde, at Apple Corps, which is the Beatles company. And by the way, the Beatles are all on board with this, so all the film and all the materials they have are part of this. And he asked me to sign a deal with them to be a consultant and to be interviewed. As the months progressed, they kept calling me more and more and asking me for more information. And I even went back into a studio in Philadelphia where they replicated the sound, and I did pick up lines over a period of 6 or 7 months. I never realized that I would be such a part of the movie. And I'm deeply honored. And I'm looking forward on Thursday to the premiere in London. And by the way, for the people listening, I know you're all around all the country. In Pittsburgh, it's going to be at the Hollywood Theater. I don't know where that is. And,
oh, really?
It's going to be in the Hollywood Theater for a week. And then the theatrical release will be about a week or two at the most. Then they go to video on demand. And then there's a DVD coming around holiday time. And all kinds of goodies. And so people will get a chance to see it at venues, in their homes. And
oh, wow.
I'm sure that it's going to do real well.
Yeah, I'm going to definitely find out about the Hollywood Theater and all that stuff and do some searching. There's a website for sure. And for us, again, we're recording right now, but when our listeners all hear this, it premieres today, September 7th, September 16th. And then we'll be available on demand and stuff the September 17th. And so in markets on September 16th, you got to go to the website, right, Larry, to find out information
right.
on the film to see where it's going to be played, right?
Absolutely. The theatrical release, of course, is limited. You know how it is in these days. And but the film is obsessive. And it's the minute you finish watching it, you're going to want to go back and see it. And if you get it on demand, you're going to want to see it again. It's just, there's so many scenes that are so dramatic and Ron Howard, who is such a beyond extraordinary filmmaker,
right,
has taken this film, and you know, he saw the Beatles when he was 9 or 10 years old on television.
Wow.
He's been enamored of them since, and he's just thrilled to have put this together.
The Beatles 8daysaweek.com is where you're going to find information. Is there any information we can find on you, Larry, as well? Do you have anything that we could follow?
Oh, sure. I have a website, LarryKane.com. And on LarryKane.com is several articles about my role in the film and an essay by me about, and also a video of the actual trailer, which is a lot of fun to watch. Trailers all over the web. And if the trailer doesn't whet your appetite, nothing will. This is a really close-up look at four extraordinary young men whose music will live on for generations to come.
Well, Larry, good luck in your travels to London for the premiere, and best of luck, and thanks for coming on the show.
Pleasure. Really enjoyed it.
Take care. Thanks, Larry. Take care. Thanks, Ben. Okay.
You on the line?
Yeah. Hi, I'm here.
All right, fantastic. So I'm excited to welcome to the program Michael Campion of the hit Netflix series Fuller House. Michael, thanks for calling, and thanks for taking the time to come by today.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, Michael, tell me when you wanted to become an actor. How old were you?
Well, I've always been interested in acting. I mean, the first time that I really, like, got started, I was about 5, and I did a small community play at my local theater, and at first I didn't really get like a big part, but the next year that I actually enrolled in a play, I got the lead role, then the next year I got the lead role, and the next year I got the lead role, so that like really sparked it for me, and then I was like, wow, this is what I want to do.
Wow, so once you did that, what made acting so much fun for you at that age to say this is what I want to do?
Well, I mean, I knew that a lot of my friends were doing, like, sports or, you know, they were doing art or whatever. But, you know, that wasn't really my thing. I mean, not to get me wrong, I like sports and art and stuff. It's just, you know, I always love acting. It's not, I can't, like, really pinpoint, like, what is most fun about it. But I guess it's just really exciting to know that, like, you know, you have the chance to be, like, on a TV show or, you know, you have a chance to meet all these, like, really cool celebrities, but that's really not what I was thinking when I was 5 or 6. But, you know, it's cool to have those benefits now.
Yeah, you just were saying, okay, this is fun, I'm doing it, and your family encouraged you, and there you go. So what would you say was your first big break opportunity? I know that you did some commercials and short films. What kind of changed your career in a way leading it up to the opportunity with Netflix, with Fuller House?
Well, honestly, even before, I mean, I had done a lot of commercials up to the point where I got this, but I had a really small play for my church, and the director, he's this guy, his name is George Living, and he hosts this thing, this, like, 5,000 seated, like, Broadway style Christmas play every year called The Singing Christmas Trees in Orlando. And he liked my performance so much that he wanted me to be in that play as the lead kid. So I thought that was, I think that would be like the start, like, wow, this is really going to take off. And then after that, I got my first movie. Then after that, I got another movie. Then I got some short films in between. Then Fuller House.
Wow. Okay. So, so all the things at once hit.
Yeah.
Like everything, it just all developed and came through in so many ways. But before Fuller House, you would say your big break would probably be Christmas Trade. Would you say?
Christmas Trade. No, I would say the Christmas play that I was talking about earlier, which would be that with the director, the one who wanted me to be in that the Christmas Broadway play.
Oh, okay. Okay, so once you went into the Broadway play, there you go. That's the big thing for sure, Michael. Gotcha. Okay, so tell us specifically how you got hooked up with the whole Fuller House, and you can tell us about the character and all that, the audition process and working with such talented people for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it started out when I was in Orlando, and I do a lot of auditions, and most of them I do on tape. So I you know, this was just another audition. I didn't even know what Fuller House was. I mean, I knew what Full House was, but it just didn't really like click with me. So at first I auditioned, you know, normal thing. Then they're like, hey, we want you back. I'm like, okay, cool. You know, sometimes they call you back, sometimes they don't. And then when they wanted me a third time, I was like, wow, okay, they're getting pretty serious about this here. And then a fourth time, and then a fifth time. And each time I did a different like section from the episode that they started working with. And by the fifth time, they're like, hey, we really want to see you out here. And I'm like, wow, okay, cool. So they flew me out for like 2 days. And at first they just wanted me to, you know, audition. But then they really, really liked me. So they're like, hey, you know what? You got the part, like, right here. You know, we've really been thinking about this. It was, like, right in the room when I got to the Warner Brothers audition studio. They told me, like, you got the part. Like, you're just amazing. So I'm like, oh, wow, thank you. I'm very honored. And I actually have a video of they were filming it in the back of and I started crying, and my mom started crying because they were both in the room. But, yeah, so they originally wanted me to say this, like, 2 or 3 days, but then they started filming early, so I had to, like, stay there, and I only had, like, a couple, like, days' worth of clothes, so I had to make that work for a few weeks.
Oh, my. So, okay. Now, any experience watching Full House before getting the part in Fuller House? Did you ever watch it on Nick at Night or certain things like that where you have had the opportunity to watch the show?
Oh, yeah, for sure. My mom introduced it to me when I was, like, 4 or 5, and I've always loved Full House. I just, you know, never really gave it a second thought when I started auditioning. I did watch it on Nick at Night, along with, like, Friends and Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and all those good 90s shows that they have on Nick at Night.
That's cool. And it's like then finally seeing these people in person when you audition and you get the part, and you're like, holy cow, look who I'm playing with. All these people that I've seen on TV forever and in different things, and I'm part of this group. That's got to be cool.
Yeah, it was absolutely insane. Actually, I didn't audition with them. I auditioned by myself first. And then when they took me to the studio to take a look around and stuff, the first person that I met was actually Andrea, the one who plays Kimmy. And it's so weird because they look exactly like they did, just like in a bigger body. It's so weird. And I was like, wow, that's like, after she left, I'm like, wow, she looks just like Kimmy Gibbler. Like, not like she hasn't aged at all. It's crazy.
It seems like none of them have aged. Isn't that true? Except the ones that were playing kids. They've aged the most, but not the ones that were adults in the show or teens to adults.
I mean, usually you would expect like a teen to go like when they're 10 or 11. You don't expect them to look like that when they're, you know, 40. It's pretty crazy.
Oh, absolutely. And it just happens to be the people for sure. And when you think of just working with that and then the whole kickoff of Fuller House and how it got such an unbelievable push, you know, on major television night talk shows and everything, you were like, wow, I wasn't thinking it was going to get this kind of build up, right?
Yeah. I mean, I at first I was like, dang, this is Full House. I mean, I was sure that it was going to have a following since, you know, Full House was so popular, but I never thought it would be like we would get picked up for a second season literally the next day that it came out, like that popular. I mean, it was really cool.
Yeah, I talked to Dave Coulier, and I had a really good conversation with him on my show. He was promoting his children's book and an album. What a great guy he is. Awesome.
Yeah, sure. Phenomenal. And Dave is hilarious.
Yeah, they're all, I'm sure it's all hilarious. So what would you say? You guys are like a big family on the set? kind of give us some ins and outs of working with all of them.
Totally. I mean, I'm closest with Candace, the one who plays DJ, but just because we have we share the same faith. I'm Christian, and she's Christian as well, so we have that in common. Actually, everyone on set I have an unbelievable connection with. Like, you know, since they had this this tight family bond, you know, for like 30 years, that's pretty crazy. So, you know, they just accepted me into this. And, you know, as well as the new kids, like Sony, the one who plays Ramona, and Elias, the one who plays Max.
Wow. Some really interesting things for sure. And then that kind of give us a storyline, because I have not watched it on Netflix yet. My kids love Full House. So tell us how the story came about for the people that didn't get the chance to watch season one, and how this group became Fuller House. Tell us about that, backstory.
Honestly, every episode is different, but if you want to know how they all got together in the same house, what happened is DJ's husband died, just like Danny's wife died. Dad, he was a firefighter, and he died in the show. And so now DJ has three boys, and, you know, now she doesn't have a place to stay, and Danny is giving up the house. He was going to sell it, but then since he knew that, DJ doesn't have a place to stay, I'll just go ahead and, you know, give her this house here. So now we're all back in the old house, and Stephanie is willing to help out, and so is Kimmy, and so now we're all just kind of like one big family.
Interesting. And then other people come back at certain times during certain episodes then, right? Like
Sure. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Go on. Sorry. I didn't mean to.
No. But just think of people like that you see come back for certain episodes. You say, I remember them on this show or this show. You're saying to yourself, holy cow. But again, it's awesome, your connection with your faith and getting your Candace to play your mom in the show. I mean, that's kind of wild, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the chances of that are pretty slim. I mean, in the acting business, not many people are Christians, to be honest. But it was amazing to have this connection with her.
And definitely, for sure. So now, how has your life changed once you came on this show? Once you became a star on this show, are you recognized a lot more in different places you go and stuff like that, and kind of have to get used to some of this?
Yeah, I mean, occasionally I'll get people. I mean, I don't really, I can't go out like too often since, you know, I'm filming and stuff. But the times that I do, when I'm out here or if I go back to Orlando where I live, a lot of people, I mean, not like every day, but some people will be like, hey, you look familiar. Are you Jackson? I'm like, oh, yeah, that's me. That's really cool. And so I'm like, hey, can you take a picture? Sure. And it's really cool to know that, like, you know, you can make a person's day just by, like, existing.
And the opportunities now with being on this show, things are opening up big time, right? Some other stuff you have coming up, right?
Oh, sorry. You went out for a second.
No, I was saying, I said with the opportunities, Michael, that you had from the opportunity at Fuller House, other opportunities are opening up. The doors are opening up for other acting opportunities now, right?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I've already gotten a lot of auditions just based on, you know, like, hey, we need like a celebrity kid just to fill in for this small part here, and so they'll be like, you know, Michael's available at this time because he's on hiatus and he's not filming. So most of the time I don't even have to audition. They're just like, we want Michael. And then my personal relations guy is just like, sure, he's available these dates.
So you were talking about the busyness of filming. Tell us how busy it is, Michael, how the shoots go. I mean, the different filmings of the episodes and stuff.
Well, our schedule goes, Tuesday we are auditioning. Wednesday we are dress rehearsal auditioning for all the scenes. And then Thursday we pre-tape all of the scenes before the live audience comes in the next day. But it really gets fun on Friday when the live audience comes in and, you know, they watch all the scenes live. And we tape them like two or three times on those dates just so, like, you know, we can get the laugh. It's so much fun because, you know, there's like an audience entertainer. All the people from Netflix are there. All the people from Warner Horizon are there. And usually we have like pizza after. It's like a party every week.
It seems like definitely a party for sure. All right. Well, I'm really rooting for you. I'm glad that you're having such great success, and continue the success. And let's see how long Fuller House lasts after Full House lasted X amount of seasons. Let's see how long this show lasts. And I love what Netflix is doing, Michael. Do you notice a lot of other spinoffs of shows I love growing up are coming to Netflix? So kudos to Netflix for looking for good quality programming.
Yeah, I didn't actually know that.
Yeah, they were talking about this artist coming back, this science guy. You have to go Google it. You'd be blown away with what's happening. So, Michael, best place we can find information on you: Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, so people can follow you and learn more about you. Where can they go?
I don't usually use Twitter, but my Instagram is Michael Campion. Just plain old Michael Campion, no spaces, no underscores, no nothing. My Snapchat is Michael Campion with two N's at the end of my name. And I'm not entirely sure what my Facebook is because I don't run my Facebook. My mom does. But if you just look up Michael Campion on Facebook, I'm sure it'll come up.
Well, fantastic. You got to definitely do that stuff for sure, Michael. Watch out. Social media, and you're busy always filming. That's how it goes. And are you homeschooled or you go to your regular school, Michael?
I do. It's kind of an odd situation for me right here. So I did go to a normal school and, you know, they'd like send me the work or whatever. But now I just switched, like just this year, like less than 7 weeks ago, to a virtual school program that my school hosts. So it's kind of like a hybrid system. Like I can go to school some days, and then other days I can just go and do it virtually if I'm busy. So it's a unique program that my school offers. And